This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And tonight, throughout, not only in my race, but throughout the country, people are choosing hope over fear and unity over division.
That's Ilhan Omar, a Somali native running, who won a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. Details coming up.
Also in Cameroon, 79 students kidnapped earlier this week have been freed, and the UN Refugee Agency reports a growing number of refugees and migrants are dying on the Mediterranean Sea crossing to Europe.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
In Cameroon, 79 students kidnapped earlier this week have been freed, but two staff members snatched with them are still being held. Officials from the church school in Bamenda, where the students were taken, say they were returned late last night, but few details are known. They also revealed that other children had been abducted last week. Bamenda is a regional capital in the English-speaking region of the country. Reporter Moki Edwin Kinziga has headed to Bamenda to cover the story. He reports on what is known so far.
The moderator of the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon, Reverend Funke Samuel Foba, who is also proprietor of the school, says late last night, some armed men brought the children to a school in the village of Bafut, that is near Bamenda, abandoned the children there and left. But the military claims they had localized the children and were ready to save them, but were afraid of maybe having some casualties. So the kidnappers escaped and abandoned the children. The most disturbing thing for now is that the school authorities have announced that they are going to seal the school. They will close the school, and the 700 children of that school should go back home because of insecurity. Insecurity, since it's not the first time the children were kidnapped from the school. On the 31st of October, 11 male children were kidnapped from that school, and the school says it paid a ransom of 2.5 million CFA francs, that is approximately $4,000, before the assailant liberated the children. Less than a week after that, 79 children and three of their staff members were also kidnapped. So the school says there is insecurity and they will not. The school is also asking for the two other staff members who have not gained their freedom to be freed immediately. The governor of the Northwest region of Cameroon, Lelin Afrikdeben Tshofo Adolf, is pleading with the school authorities not to seal the school and asking parents to allow their children there to go to school. But the parents are indicating that due to the insecurity, they are moving their children to safer localities, even in the French-speaking regions. They are questioning why the government should always assure them that it's security, yet their children are kidnapped, yet teachers are killed, yet schools are torched. So it is a complicated situation out here, and we are going to be informing you of developments as early as I get to the northwest regional town, Bamenda. But the children, we're told, are now with the military and the governor. They're trying to give them some psychological care. They're trying to discuss with the children to make sure they don't have any health complications or any health issues. Moki Edwin Kinziga for VOA News on the way to Bamenda, northwestern Cameroon.
Yesterday, we introduced you to Ilhan Omar, a Somali native running for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. She spoke with our colleagues in the VOA Somali service shortly after winning last night. We bring you part of the interview and a bit of her victory speech. We seem to have a little technical difficulty. Go ahead.
Okay, yes. The UN Refugee Agency reports a growing number of refugees and migrants are dying on the Mediterranean Sea, crossing to Europe because non-governmental organizations are being prevented from conducting search and rescue missions. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports more than 2,000 refugees and migrants have lost their lives on the Mediterranean this year. It says the number of drownings has escalated sharply, mainly in the central Mediterranean. In September, it notes one of every eight people making the dangerous journey toward Italy died. UNHCR spokesman Charlie Yaxley blames the increasing loss of life largely on the substantially reduced search and rescue operations.
In light of this, UNHCR continues to be very concerned about the legal and logistical restrictions that have been placed on a number of NGOs wishing to conduct search and rescue operations, including the Aquarius. These have had the cumulative effect of the central Mediterranean currently having no NGO vessels conducting search and rescue.
Yaxley says the Libyan Coast Guard has assumed primary responsibility for search and rescue missions within its territorial waters. He says these efforts have saved many lives. While welcoming that, he tells VOA the UNHCR is concerned people who are rescued are being taken back to Libya where conditions are not safe.
I think it's been well documented that for those that are returned to Libya, they face the routine use of being held in detention. And there have been reports of various human rights violations. So we're advocating to states and particularly to resettlement countries to assist us with evacuating people out of those places.
The UNHCR says any vessel that has the capability to assist search and rescue operations should be allowed to come to the aid of those in need. To do otherwise, it warns, will doom many people fleeing persecution, violence, and poverty to death. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Like we mentioned earlier, yesterday we introduced you to Ilhan Omar, a Somali native, running for a seat in the U.S. House of Representatives. She spoke with our colleagues in the VOA Somali service shortly after winning last night. We bring you part of that interview and a bit of a victory speech.
It's an exciting night. It's been a really amazing journey. We've had really great opportunities to have a conversation across the district to really talk about what direction we wanted to take our country. And tonight, throughout not only in my race, but throughout the country, people are choosing hope over fear and unity over division. And it's a really exciting opportunity in a time when Somalis are on the Muslim ban, to be sending a Somali refugee to Congress, Minnesota is sending a clear message. And it's an exciting opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah. Thank you all for being here with us. Thank you for welcoming us to Song and Dance. What an amazing journey this has been. I stand here before you tonight as your congresswoman-elect with many firsts behind my name. The first woman of color to represent our state in Congress. The first woman to wear a hijab to represent us in Congress. The first refugee ever elected to Congress. And one of the first Muslim women elected to Congress. A title I share with my beautiful sister from Michigan, Rashida Tlaib.
We love you, Ilhan!
In yesterday's U.S. midterm election, voters gave control of the House of Representatives to the Democratic Party for the first time in 8 years. But Republicans bolstered their hold on the Senate. The Senate gains will make it easier to get approval for President Donald Trump's nominees for key appointments. But Democratic control of the House could mean challenges to Trump's agenda. Another winner last night is Joe Neguse, the first African-American elected to Congress from the western state of Colorado. The Democrat is the son of immigrants from Eritrea. The election saw record numbers of women, people of color, and members of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community elected to federal, state, and city offices all across the country.
Coming up on 16 Minutes Past the Hour, this is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The jobs and cultural opportunities that cities offer has led to major urbanization around the world. Projections say in the next 15 years, African cities will add 300 million new urban residents. While the potential exists for the population increases to fuel economic growth, they also can make living conditions worse. About 1 million of the 7 million global deaths from air pollution occur in Africa. Water and sanitation systems need expansion and upgrades. Crime is on the rise, and the conditions are ripe for infectious diseases to spread rapidly. So the UN has put together a week-long meeting on health and pollution that's aimed at getting government officials and other planners to discuss the best ways forward. Sustainable economic development needs to pull together all facets of society, and that includes making rural areas more attractive. Dr. Subhajee Hood of the WHO is leading the program on cities. She spoke with my colleague, Paul Alexander.
So we understand that exposure of environment in urban areas to air pollution, to poor sanitation, and even bringing people to the vulnerability of being victim of crime and violence is still prominent in many cities in Africa. So for us in the WHO, we try to engage with urban planning and make sure that they take health into consideration. We have been promoting healthy cities to many countries, and yet the investment on these issues has been very small. So we would like to see more investment in a comprehensive form rather than a small project.
So how do countries plan for the big population increases that are still ahead when they have problems today that they say that they can't afford to pay for?
In many countries like Ethiopia, of course, they generate a lot of domestic investment on mass transportation, on housing, and a few countries are now working on the improve their urban planning to address the pollution problem. But of course, they have to work together with the development partners and donors agency to support this kind of investment on infrastructure and transportation, communications, and adequate quality housing in the urban area.
So people are drawn to metropolitan areas because they see more job opportunities than in the countryside. So how do we encourage job creation when many jobs make other problems worse, like pollution, competition for jobs, higher rents, etc.?
For this problem is really a hard problem for a country to tackle. It really depends on the governance structure, the policies that they could put into the process. We also looking into other opportunities like alternative solutions to invest more on the rural development to make sure that we have equal access to health, education, and other services in rural areas to prevent influx of population to urban area. But this is something that's very difficult to tackle. Some of the civil society have started empowering people to see the benefit of living in the rural area as compared to living in the cities. and how they can live a better life and have a sustainable social life, cultural life, as compared to the city. The main issue is of this is a development that need to have equality in mind. So the government in Africa is still facing a lot of challenges to bring investment to support the economy. And, of course, being a small country, a low-income country, they could not generate their own domestic funds that would help them in the long run.
So how do we convince people then to also stay in their own countries and not become migrants, which creates problems elsewhere?
This is what we try to giving a good opportunity in the rural areas and education to the people using the health advocacy, engaging with the different sectors in different areas, or even create a satellite cities that could reduce the burden of metropolitans.
That was Dr. Suvajit Hood of the WHO speaking with my colleague Paul Alexander.
Voters in Madagascar cast their ballots today, hoping for change in one of the world's poorest countries, which has been plagued by instability. But the prospects for major change in the Indian Ocean country are far from clear. The top three of 36 candidates for president have already served in the position over the last 16 years. An estimated 76% of Madagascar's 25 million people live in extreme poverty. Unemployment is high despite reserves of nickel, cobalt, gold, uranium, and other minerals. But the country's instability has scared away many international investors. In May, the army threatened to take over amid huge street protests. The last elected president resigned to run for a fresh term. A unity government took over until elections could be held. Long lines were reported at polling stations. Preliminary results are expected within a week, and officials have until November 28th to declare the final outcome. If no candidate gets more than 50% of the vote, a runoff election is scheduled for December 19th.
French President Emmanuel Macron was joined last night by Mali's President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita in Reims, France, to commemorate the hundreds of thousands of African troops who were brought to France to fight for the country in World War I. This is the first time in history a tribute has been made by any head of state to the African soldiers who were taken from their homes that were then French colonies in Mali, Senegal, Tunisia, Algeria, and Morocco. Catherine Field covered the ceremony and spoke with me about the significance of the event.
If you look at, for example, what happened in France, in eastern France, on that Western Front, some of these African soldiers who were known as Senegalese riflemen, they were really in the thick of some of the most brutal fighting that went on along there. 200,000 African soldiers were sent from France's colonies to Europe to fight for the Allies there. Some 30,000 died. Now, the ceremony which we had in eastern France on Tuesday night really was very symbolic, because this is only monument to African troops who first served in that First World War. To have had the French president, Emmanuel Macron, and the Malian president, Keita, there attending that inauguration of that monument was incredibly symbolic. To have that gratitude being shown by France for these troops is very important. And also, when you think about what the Malian president said, he said that 200,000 soldiers fought day and night, fought for France, and said that they fought for themselves as much as they fought for justice and liberty.
Why did it take so long for them to do this?
It really did take many generations, and I think we can specifically look at Emmanuel Macron, the French president, for taking the lead on this. He is the first French president who's been born in this post-empire, post-colonial era. And this is all part of what we're seeing from Emmanuel Macron, who's trying to address, if you like, the injustices of France's colonial rule. Let's not forget that he has traveled to various parts of Francophone Africa, and at one stage he even talked about a crime against humanity that France had committed in these areas. But I think that he will need to go further, because there is still a lot of resentment about some of the broken promises that the French had, particularly for these soldiers in World War I. They were promised military pensions, which they never received. They were promised passports, which they never received. 30,000 died and 200,000 of them came, and you know, many of them went home again. They have descendants, and these descendants still want more from the French state as a recognition of what they did.
Also, I'd like to go back a bit on the battle. You mentioned what a brutal battle this was. Can you tell us more about this?
It was brutal on many fronts, mostly because that Western Front was really the area between France and Germany, France and Belgium. Not only that, it was in winter, so let's not forget some of these soldiers were having to operate in climatic conditions which they just didn't know. And also the Battle of Hants, where this monument was inaugurated, was, if you like, the last battle that was fought for the protection of Paris. These Senegalese riflemen that held back the Germans in the final battles of World War I, they stopped the Germans being able to get to Paris. So in lots of ways, the French really do have them to thank for the fact that Paris did not fall to the Germans in World War I.
And now, I guess after the battle, then they returned back home. And so now what do the descendants want?
They want more recognition, particularly in terms of military pensions and passports. What you have to remember is when we saw that great movement of Africans to Europe, this was an enormous temporary migration to Europe in a very short space of time. So they came, some of them didn't feel they were treated very well. And then when they went back, I think this is another point that people forget, that it really did change the attitude of the indigenous people to the French when they went back, because they suddenly had a different view. And there are historians, particularly in Europe, who have said not only were they not recognized for the duty that they did in France, but also subsequently that history has never really recorded their contributions to World War I, but particularly in French history, that the African soldiers' contribution has really not been addressed and has not been properly taught in French schools.
That was reporter Catherine Field speaking with me from Paris.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Xiaogun Cheng, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, Americans vote in the U.S. midterm elections on November 6th. We'll examine what the results mean for America's domestic and foreign policy, particularly as they relate to Africa and Africans, on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
VOAAfrica.com.
On VOAAfrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.